Hello, excuse me. Have you got a moment to hear about our writing saviours? They failed, so we didn't have to. No, please come back. It's all here in the good book, look. Oh, well, it would be in the good book, but they haven't quite got round to finishing it. Sorry. Typical. Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast.
Hello.
Hello there.
I'm going to start the podcast today, Tom, with an expletive.
Oh.
Is that okay? Do you mind?
Yeah.
It's one of those, it's to reinforce my point, though, so that they're all right.
That's
aren't
acceptable,
they?
Yeah. It's in context, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Here I go. Golly gosh. Golly flaming gosh, Tom.
Whoa, didn't we get a lot of entry?
What?
You push it too far sometimes, mate. That's just
too much.
Offensive. Yeah, but we did get a lot of entries.
We did get a lot of entries to our flash fiction competition.
I was maybe thinking about using the word overwhelmed.
Yeah.
With entries.
Yeah.
In a literal sense of, shit, I've got to read all these.
it was the point, wasn't it? It was like 3 days before the deadline.
Yeah.
It got a bit scary.
Yeah.
Because they were literally just like, bing, bing, bing. It's like, okay, if they're coming in that quick, how am I actually going to read them?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was...
So we didn't actually read any of them. We just completely judged them on the titles. That was easy. We just deleted half of them, looked at the title if we didn't like the title.
That's not true, listeners.
No, that's not true. We did read all of them. And I tell you what, John, and this isn't one of those things that people, you know, but, oh, people always say this in competition. Well, the standard was very high. Everyone did great.
Are you going to say they were shit?
No, there was a lot of good stuff.
It really was.
Really. It was... I think out of all the ones we've done, it was the hardest in terms of filtering out a shortlist. Mm. There were so many that were really, really good.
I totally agree.
And could have got on.
Yeah.
Whereas in previous years, there's kind of been some that have stood out head and shoulders, and there's been some other good ones, but there's been like, there was a lot that were really bloody good, genuinely.
Yeah, yeah. I had a folder I was moving things across to a long list, and I was actually too embarrassed to show it to you, Tom.
I think mine was... Mine was very long as well.
Literally like half the entries.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then you start thinking, well, I'll have to get rid of some of these. And then you start looking through them and going, I can't get rid of that one. Oh, God, I can't get rid of that one. Oh, that one is
so
good.
Good.
That's staying.
From last year, I remember being a little bit brutal. Like if there's mistakes and things, it's almost like you get to the stage where they're all so good, you have to decide somehow. So you start chucking out the ones that have got...
On stupid little arbitrary things.
I mean, not like missing...
I hate that font. Delete. That kind of thing.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. But you have to
double spaced
somehow.
After a full stop. You're going in the bin, sunshine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tell you what we did get, John, at least we think we got,
was I know what you're gonna say,
at least two... AI-generated stories.
I think so, for the first time. Very strong suspicion there.
I think the two... I mean, there may have been others that circumnavigated our excellent literary detection skills.
But these seemed ChatGPT written wholesale rather than
not really changed. Just kind of straight spewed out, weren't they?
But I suppose, in fairness, it's a £500 competition, isn't it? If it's free to enter, why would you not? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not encouraging people, but I can see why people thought,
I may as well.
Screw it.
I can't write. I've never written anything in my life. I'll just whack it in here and see.
An email's free.
Yeah.
Screw it.
Maybe. But it was interesting, wasn't it, in the state of where we are. And obviously with speaking to Andy Stanton next week about his book that involves AI and ChatGPT.
Yes.
Just seemed very...
controversially. Andy Stanton has written an adult book using ChatGPT, which we have mentioned on the podcast before, but we are going to have a chat with him next week.
Yeah,
I was thinking, do you think we should charge a tiny amount in the future just to prevent people entering? Just for the
I was thinking. Honestly, like I was thinking
£2 or something that would stop people bothering.
I think, or a donation to charity. I don't know. I don't know how
that's
we do
really
it, but we need
idea.
To do something, won't we? Where there's
some
little barrier to entry that, because I think by this time next year, we may be.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But thankfully, there are only a couple of them, we reckon, so that's a relief.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that.
Do you know what was really heartening as well?
What?
A lot of people that sent stuff in, that wrote us a little message on sending in, of people saying, I've not been writing for 30 years and this has got me to do it, or I've been, you've, inspired me to actually get off my backside and do something. And long-time listeners like Jen Young emailed us saying, oh, I've not really been doing what I want, but this is, I've done this, and kind of, and it's just great to catch up with some of them and to find out that we're kind of doing some good in the world, John.
Maybe helping, maybe a little bit.
A little bit, in
that
places.
It was really lovely, wasn't it? It was lovely. It almost made doing this podcast worthwhile.
Yeah.
No, it was great. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for sending them in, and thank you for your little notes as well. We had some funny little notes.
We
for
did.
People.
We did. My favourite was, I can't remember who this is. I probably shouldn't say who it is in case it is embarrassing and not intentional. But on the bottom of their email, you know, like people have the little disclaimers or something like that, or if, you know, if this has reached you by mistake, please delete and stuff like that. This just said, here's my entry, blah, 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 blah. Please let me know if you don't receive this email.
It's got to be a joke, hasn't it?
I don't know. It's either hilarious or hilarious.
Yeah. Was that like a standard payoff, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know.
On the bottom of the email, or was that just
I'm thinking about using it on all my emails now. So.
Yeah, it's really good.
I like it. But no, thank you. We literally had hundreds and hundreds of entries. So thank you to everyone that's taken time to enter.
Yeah, thank you, people. Hey, do you know who we should thank now?
Who?
Tommy? We thanked the people who have entered. I think we should thank our sponsor, Scrivener.
Yeah. I think we've got a little advert for them.
Let's hear it. Trouble is with you, Tom, you're just not with it.
Oh, and you are you?
Yeah, totes. You know how up to the minute with all the best shizzle I am.
No.
Like, well, I've just been writing on my Scriv.
You can't call it that. No one calls it that. It's Scrivener, and everyone who knows anything about writing software already uses it.
Yeah, well, I've just been banging out some goondalicks on the Scriv, you know?
Wait, what? Goondalicks?
Yes, what the cool kids are calling word count these days. Get with it, man. Gonna unflink my wissybanks and chimmel my brincasters.
On your Scriv, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, just stop it.
All right, don't have a hubby chunk.
Oh. A what?
Scriv gets 20 Urkels doof by getting the Heidi flop failing at snafflethink and poppop.com.
That's literatureandlatte.com.
That's what I said.
20% off using the code failing.
That is literally what I said.
No, 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 it's really not.
God, you're such a shivlipplumpus.
Tell them about the 30-day free trial too.
Oh yeah, and there's a 30 spinkle sumsum.
Properly.
There's a 30-day free trial too.
Thank you.
Chumbuncha.
What do you call me? Yeah, huge thanks to Scrivener for helping us out again this year. It does make a difference, and obviously means we can put a decent prize pot to attract lots of dodgy people to send in AI generated content for us to slog through to get to the real stories. That's great. Yeah,
I suppose we should
wrap it up. Oh no, we should probably we should probably mention the winners and stuff and things, should we?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, should we get Kathy in? Should we get our judge in?
Yeah, let's have a chat with Kathy Hoyle and see who's bloody won.
So, Kathy, hello.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, we're very good, thanks. Much more low-key entrance today.
No cannon today.
Well, it does take its toll, doesn't it, after a while? Too many shots out of cannon. It can be too much.
It's a long recovery time, I have to say. Yeah. Gentle stroll in today.
Very traditional entry through the door. Very good, very good.
Hey, Kathy, before we say anything else, congratulations on your latest shortlisting.
Oh, yeah.
Oxford Flash Fiction Prize.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're just a machine, aren't you?
Machine. Actually, that's a funny one because I've never been able to enter it before because I was a reader for the previous competitions.
Right.
And I stepped down from reading and I thought, yeah, let's just throw my own hat in the ring. I don't know the other readers. They change them all the time. Mm. And so it's the first time I've been able to enter it. So to be shortlisted is really nice. Yeah, I'm really
amazing.
Delighted.
It feels a little bit unfair, like maybe you should just stand aside for a while, do you know what I mean? Give some other people a chance for a change.
I will.
So what was are you allowed to tell us what the story is? Or is it because it's ongoing, you've got to keep it all stumped?
It's still being judged, so I'm not allowed to say anything at all.
Well, as if people needed it, that's even more reassurance that the judge for this competition knows what she's on about. So if you do get through to the shortlist, or the finalist or even win, it will be very well deserved.
Yes.
We should probably find out who's on the shortlist, really, shouldn't we? Or, Kathy, do you have any overall thoughts on the standard of entries that we put your way?
I think the standard was really high, actually. And I was delighted because I wasn't sure what to expect. I was expecting an eclectic mix because, you know, this might be the first time people have written Flash. Mm. They've listened to the podcast, yeah, and perhaps this would be their first time writing Flash. But I have to say the standard was really, really high. I was delighted with reading the work. So well done, yeah, everybody.
They were actually genuinely really enjoyable to read as well.
They were.
It was like having a lovely, lovely anthology presented to you. Like you say, there was, because I think because of the theme as well, it was a very wide... I mean, the only thing with the theme is we did get an awful lot of depressing stories.
That is
in.
Really true.
It has to be said. Going through the hundreds of entries, it was a little bit like, oh my god, right? Oh, they're dead. Oh, that's a missing child.
Was there a point, Tom? Was there a point where you slightly regretted the theme of this year's competition?
Yeah, you know, when we tossed the coin and it could have been birthday or it could have been failure. Yeah. I think birthday might have brought out a few more fun ones.
Well, let's pocket that for next year.
Next year's my birthday.
I feel like people really took the failing to heart, didn't they? Like they went big with the failing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, big failing consequences. But yeah, people embraced it, but that's not a... I don't know what that says about our listeners.
I think that's Flash in general, though. People do tend to lean towards the heartbreak and the trauma and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
they're
maybe
very powerful emotions, so yeah, perhaps that's why.
To be fair, we did say go for the truth, the hard to write. And, so we,
there's something that's hard to write with the feelings, yeah.
Egged that on a bit, didn't we?
People took that on board. But what it has led to is some excellent, excellent stories.
Exactly.
And some of them, when they do just hit a nerve and hit a tone with you, they really do carry a lot of weight for 500 words, don't they?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's the skill.
I didn't think that my long list could get any longer than last year, but it was actually even longer.
Yeah, we had to be quite brutal, didn't we? I mean, there's a lot of good ones that fell by the wayside that, on another day, just with a, it could have quite easily found the way into the shortlist, I think, really. I think it's fair to say.
There were so many good ones on our long list. I thought we should incorporate some of them into a little ditty. Do you want to have a listen to the little ditty?
Yes, I definitely do.
Okay, here we go.
So many entries made us happy, but we could only send a few to Kathy, so we just want you to know we're not amused. Did you have to make it so bloody hard to choose? There was Phil Oddie with his horribly bleak vision, Aaron Court with an aeroplane collision, Maggie Sinclair and her avian derision, and Steve Salisbury's time traveler's decision. We got Christoph Mike Liu's cautionary tale, Johnny Preston trying to close the sale. We got Ian Marshall trying not to fail, and Zach Sheridan's voice struggling to sail. Katie Holloway with how much fun being in Labour isn't. Manu St. Thomas favours favouritism. Casper Io's unexpected mission. Usha Jen Young's best man not be kissing. Tales of the homeless left to shaken. From Alistair Baker and Richard Lakin and Christian Fieldhouse. I must say though, we love Chest from Akimoju Baseyo. Also Diana's piece and just how nice is Sarah Thompson's poor nursing crisis. Arooj Sire's an excellent horror writer. Felt bad for Becky Simmons' failing hiker. Lucy Bullivant's flood of loss. Craig Margolis's inattentive boss. Arlene Connor's text that just don't give a toss. Chris Cotton knows it ain't worth getting cross. Amanda Breslow and Andrew Miller's grievers. And a plumbing podcast from Mark Weaver. Jeff Harrison's computer's got a fever. But why did Steven Spielberg's mother have to leave her?
God, that's how you announce a long list.
There you go.
I think all Flash competitions should have that.
Take note. They should
have their own little song.
Do you know what the best thing about that song is, Kathy? The best thing about that song is it was my idea, but I didn't actually do anything with the idea. I just said, John, I've had a really good idea for a song that you can go and do. So John had to put in all the hard yards on it.
And this is how collaboration works.
And you're coming in at the end and taking the credit. Yeah, it's perfect. You're right, it's perfect.
Hey, that reminds me of some, just a very quick aside. Mm. We will get on to the nominations and the winners, people. But very quick aside, interestingly, I saw on Fiverr, you know, the platform where people will do things for a fiver and what have you. There was something on there.
Sounds well done.
It does.
where people, someone was offering to come up with an idea for a novel for you.
Oh.
Wow. And what were they charging a fiver?
For the basic idea, yes. Or they could give you an outline for a lot more. Uh-huh. But it just struck me as a very weird thing. As a failing writer, that's the bit you come up with yourself.
That's the only bit we're good at.
That's literally the fun bit.
That's the only bit you can do.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah. I mean, you can just do that time after time after time and not having to write
it. Someone say, who are the people that are thinking, do you know what? I am just writing, but I have no ideas.
Yeah.
I'm putting the hours in, but I'm not writing about anything. I'm just writing words. I need an idea to hook this all around.
That's not the bit we struggle with,
It's like a really weird reverse thing. Yeah, very strange.
But there's no
very
one on there thought, hey, offering to write the book you've had an idea for.
I'm sure you could pass it down the line. Yeah, you could probably employ quite a few people and not touch it at all and end up with a brilliant end product. Very much like that, really. Where I had a little idea that you took with him. That was fantastic, John.
Thanks very much.
And well done to everyone that was mentioned in there.
But I want to reiterate, that is not our exhaustive long list.
No, I was just going to say, that's the scary thing.
We had a lot more on there.
You can double that and add a few, can't you, for the ones that... But I wouldn't let John do a three-chorus song, so...
I was going to say, that would be a lengthy ballad.
Yeah, that was banned quite early on, wasn't it?
Those will be released in the musical, the full musical. that will be taken to Broadway.
Long list, the musical. On. I like it, actually.
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah,
could work.
There you go. You could, £5 for that idea, if anyone wants it.
sell it on Fiverr. Look at us waffling on when people will be sat there going, this is all very very, very entertaining stuff, people. But I would like to know whether I've won.
I mean, the probability is that you haven't won.
Oh, don't say that to people, John.
No. Everybody's
Someone
a winner.
Out there listening now has won. And they don't know yet. That's the thing, is we haven't actually told, we haven't been in touch with anyone at all. So this is as it happens.
It is. It's live, sort of.
Ish.
So sure, how are we doing this? We're gonna do it in reverse order. We're gonna start with the second runner up. Who wins?
Oh no. Wait, John.
No, we're not. No.
So let's start with out of the final shortlist that we sent to you, Kathy.
Oh yeah.
There was some that deserved a special mention. They didn't quite make it into the prize categories. Onto the podium, but definitely needed a special mention.
Yes.
Yeah, so I had three stories because, like you, I was struggling to narrow it down because they were all equally good, just very different. So the first special mention is Chest, a story called Chest, which I thought was a wonderful exploration of a complex mother and daughter relationship. It was unflinching, very, very real. We often get stories about cancer, people with cancer in competitions as a central theme. But what I liked about this story was it wasn't overly sentimental. It was very powerful and very visceral.
I know that was one of your favourites, John, wasn't
it? Yeah, I really liked that. That was by Akinmoju Basayo from Nigeria.
Yeah, no, it was really good. That
called
really,
Chest.
Really good. That
fabulous
one.
Stuff. Very much enjoyed that. The next story I'd like to mention was called Only Crows Count. But several reasons, actually. We don't get a lot of myth and magic in Flash. We tend not to, which I think is a huge shame because outside of Flash, this is the stuff that I like to write. So I loved it because it stood out just because of that, and also it was dialogue heavy, almost all dialogue, in fact. And to push a story forward, a very compressed story with only dialogue, I think is really clever, challenging for the writer. And this writer pulled it off beautifully.
And that was Casper Lowe, was the writer on that one,
or Casper Io?
Well done.
Oh, it could be. I mean,
I think that's an
Io. Oh, you're right. Yeah, I got confused by the capital there.
And the third special mention, I could just go on. Actually, we'd be here forever. All they're all special and all fabulous.
Just list them all.
The Gathering Evening, which I thought was a really nice title. Again, another heartbreaker. And this story had a really powerful opening image. In the thick autumn light, falling leaves pooled slick and dark like blood in the lane. Now that's an opening sentence, you know.
That is good.
It was really good. It was beautifully told with a really nice sort of twist at the end, which didn't feel forced.
No, I was going to say that about the twist in that one. It wasn't, it's difficult to call it a twist, isn't it? Because it just felt like it was a slightly blindsided, obvious direction.
You felt it was coming.
So it wasn't a twist in like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened.
But it wasn't.
It was almost
nice.
Confirmed. Yeah, of course. That's
nicely subtle.
No, it was really, really nice, that one, yeah.
That was by Stephen Stillbeck from the UK.
So those three, yeah, well done, guys. That's brilliant. I say well done. You don't win anything. He's got your name read out and someone said
still
well
nice, though, isn't it? Isn't that? That's probably the best bit.
Better than nothing, isn't it? Yeah.
Isn't it?
That's what you want to hear. Can puff out your chest with hearing that, for sure.
Maybe on a future episode, we'll get a chance to share those stories.
Yeah,
full.
I think we should.
John, that
definitely
would be a nice thing to do, might it? So, now it's time to move on to the winners, the actual winners.
Exciting.
Now, you've picked a first place.
Yes.
A runner-up.
Yes.
And a second runner-up.
Yes.
So let's start with the bronze medal, the second runner-up.
Who wins a copy of Scrivener and some exclusive limited edition Failing Writers merch, which possibly is even, that's bigger than the £500.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Get that on eBay.
It really is. Well, congratulations to the writer of Firing Bibby, which I thought was wonderful.
And that's Jay McKenzie who wrote that.
Who typed his name incorrectly the first time he sent it. So he says in the email, you can call me either Jay or Hat, whichever you prefer.
I take my hat off to
Hat
you.
McKenzie.
This one stood out because humour is, again, we don't see that much of it in Flash. It's hard to pull off humour, I have to say.
I love this one.
Again, in this short space of time. But it was really vividly written. I felt like, because they used the podcast as a kind of a springboard, if excuse the pun, because it is about being fired out of a cannon. I thought that was clever. And I also think, am I Great Aunt Bibby? Because it's about an elderly woman being fired out of a cannon. So I wonder if
you were visualising your auntie being shot.
Myself.
Oh, that's nice. It was also just such a lovely bit of light relief in a sea of quite heavy stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's have a listen to it.
Oh, yes, please.
Firing Bibby by Jay McKenzie. It's amazing how far a pensioner can go when fired from a cannon. I'm sorry, I haven't got time, we all said, when Great Aunt Bibby asked us to break her out of St. Cream for the charity cannon caper. Yet, here we are. We gather on the fringes of the carnival for what we are certain will be Great Aunt Bibby's final journey.
No morals,
huffs Mum.
Firing old ladies from cannons.
They've dressed Great Aunt Bibby in a lycra jumpsuit, a flammable, sheeny blue. She's a tiny bird-boned thing. But even so, there's bits of an aunt on show that a nephew should never have to see. I gaze mournfully at the normal carnival guests, ambling between coconut shies and shuggy boats. They're sticky with candy floss and toffee apple, lightly crusted with powdered sugar from the hot donuts. I want to be walking amongst them, not waiting for a geriatric projectile.
Here we go!
Great Aunt Bibby is fizzing as they stuff her down the barrel of the cannon. Her eyes bulge behind goggles, mouth stretched into a wide grin. They've topped her off with a red helmet, like a matchstick. She yells, waggling her bony fingers from the rim. We wave back, rictus smiles on our lips. The rest of the family are gathered at the net, where, according to physics, she's going to land safely. Not a break nor bruise on her 84-year-old body.
A five.
Great Aunt Bibby hunkers down in the barrel.
A four.
I can't watch.
A three.
Film it, son.
A two.
The phone wobbles in my hand.
A one.
The paramedics step forward.
Fire.
There's a disappointing pop. A flash like a bonfire night sparkler. And then she's off. A bargain basement Superman arcing through the encroaching dusk.
Looks like she'll hit the net,
says an organiser, surprised. Mum's muttering something. A prayer, perhaps? Or maybe the lyrics to Danger Zone? Great Aunt Bibby seems to pause at the apex. Then,
She's heading down, gathering speed, a bullet of windmilling arms and legs, and I exhale. She's gathered into the welcoming embrace of the net.
Phew,
says Dad. The organisers slap one another's backs. The paramedics stand down.
Look.
Great Aunt Bibby is on the move again. She wasn't caught. She is bounced.
Oh, God.
She soars, a rock catapulted by Dennis the Menace. Up, up, up. She crests with a roll, heading down again. We're running now, sky staring.
She's going to hit the Elter Skelter.
She hits the top of the slide, red helmet first. Whoosh. She slips, she slides with alpine grace, round, round, round. We reach the bottom in a breathless heap, just as she does. For a moment, she's still. We hold a collective breath. Then she stands like an Olympic gymnast, arms raised to rapturous applause. Dad laughs.
Unbelievable! Oh, good job you filmed that.
As Great Aunt Bibby is lifted to their shoulders, I take out my phone. The screen is blank. Crap.
So that was Firing Bibby, our third place from Hat McKenzie. Maybe you should have that. You know, people have like a nickname, middle name. It should be like Jay the Hat McKenzie.
Like a gangster.
That's what we call you now, Jay. That's your name.
That's your gangster
There's
name.
There's one other little thing I wanted to say about that piece. I really like the payoff at the end, but partly because, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but there's something very... Sort of the moment, something very contemporary and relevant about the idea that things are only worth doing if they make good social media content.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like we all felt really disappointed hearing that last bit.
Yeah.
But that, there's something to be questioned about that as well, isn't there? It's like just the idea that that's even in there and that that should be the payoff. There's something weirdly upsetting about that. I thought it was really good for that reason, as well as being a good payoff.
Yeah. Anyway, I did too.
Just thought I'd say that.
It was just thoroughly enjoyable from start to finish.
It was.
Now, Kathy, you said between first place and second place, there was not a lot to pick between them, and you had some sleepless nights.
I did it so much with these two, and I did. I have to say, they were both technically very, very good stories. In the end, I mean, both of them, we were talking about writing with truth and making the writer feel something. And both of them did exactly that. To be honest, it was a subjective preference in the end, because I just thought, I'm just going to go with my own heart, which one appeals to me more. But technically, I think they were of equal brilliance.
So who's getting second place? Who's first loser?
I'd like to call it my first runner-up with a brilliant story. A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes.
And that's by Lucy Bullivant from the UK. Well done, Lucy.
Fabulous.
A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes by Lucy Bullivant. Your mother claps her hands once and, with eyes closed tight, blows out the rainbow of candles on the cake she made for herself. A grey smoke screen swirls between your parents. Have a piece, she says, hands scanning for a knife as your father is making motions to go. I'm sorry, I don't have time, he says. Your father leaves. This is the last time you see him. You can't hear the door close behind him over the retching and the splat and slap as your mother throws up her heart onto the cold, black granite. It looks like a still-bald baby bird. It barely beats. You run to rescue it, but she stops you with bile breath and a gentle hand. It's too late, she says. The next time you see her, she is in the basement, turning each jar on the shelves, frantic fingers searching through dust and memories. It's here somewhere, she says to nothing and anything. I've forgotten where I put it. She sees you and runs over. She presses her ear to your chest and holds you too tight. When she lets go, she smooths your jumper. Good, she says, kissing you. Good. Your mother is floating on her tears in the living room. You can see her through the lead bars on the bay window. She has made a raft from a family portrait and is still crying. The house moans, furniture drags painfully against the walls. The house weeps. Water pours through the cracks and you stand on the drowning grass outside. You know your feet will never be dry. The detritus of her life collects at the window shore. A photo of your parents is suffocating under her childhood teddy. You don't want to get closer. You have never seen her cry before. She's always been a dry thing, warm and safe. The salty smell of her tears disgusts you. Your mother holds a finger up for your attention and rummages in her pocket. She pulls out a notebook and writes, "I've nearly found it." Your mother loves exclamation points. She says they are friendly. You think they are aggressive. "Stop biting your nails," she adds. Your mother is cradling the music box that was made the day that she was. It is scratched and dented at the edges, but there is still some gloss clinging on. The house and her eyes are dry. All the furniture is gone. There is a sparkling blankness. "I was just about to eat," she says and opens the music box, to the plink and plonk of its princess chimes, the song she sang sweetly to you as a baby. She eats the full fat beating heart that she had lost and smiles at you with bloody teeth. When she is finished, she lets out a breath that betrays the oceans within. So, Kathy, what was it about this one that stood out to you?
Okay, well, where do I start? It was a second person point of view, which is a nicely original structure, point of view. So that instantly made it interesting to me to read. I love the contrast because a dream is a wish your heart makes. I was expecting something kind of Disney-esque, you know, from the title, and it was like, bam, no, that's not what you're getting at all. It was really visceral. There's some startling images in there. The stillborn baby bird heart beating, you know, which the writer then brings around again at the end, the heart being eaten with bloody teeth. I was like, oh God, that's so gross, but so brilliant. And then the way the writer kind of leads us effortlessly from these grounding opening paragraphs into the surreal, that's really clever. And it's very difficult to pull off. But it's also my favourite kind of flash, anything that goes strange or surreal.
It reads a bit like a dream, doesn't it? Like a, sort of a nightmare or a really confusing kind of... Well, it's not confusing, but you know what I mean.
Which can be a brave thing to write, because it is easy to lose the reader at that point, isn't it? Where you suddenly go, well, actually, this isn't entirely real.
It's not real.
What's going on? Yeah. We have a saying at Writers HQ, it's, do you really need that dolphin? Which basically means when you kind of go off-piste into a story and you go strange and it's fabulous, but then you just go super strange and it's too much.
Yeah.
So by sort of harnessing the strangeness in this story, the writer did brilliantly.
But then it's punctuated with these little moments of real kind of, well, they're just not surreal. They're completely real.
Grounded,
like the bit where the mum presses her ear to your chest and holds you tight. When she lets go, she smooths your jumper. Good, she says, kissing you. Good. Little moments like that are so brilliant.
And there's some brilliant use of, like, I guess, like, layered metaphor, isn't there? Where, water pours through the cracks and you stand on the drowning grass outside. You know your feet will never be dry.
That's a line I've underlined it myself, actually. And the detritus of her life collects at the window shore. That's a beautiful way of using language, a window shore. I mean, that's just so unusual. Really wonderful stuff in there. It is a story, you know, what I call a gasp story, where you just go, you know, at the end there, and just, oh gosh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, that end line is absolutely brilliant, I think. It feels like that idea of making a conscious decision to move on and to be happy, you know, and return your heart to the place it used to reside. but it's just not, it doesn't work, you know, deep down.
No.
You're not really ready to do that. But yeah, very, very,
very
good.
So talking about burying our feelings deep and trying to lie to ourselves and trying to push through, I would say that would lead on to your winning story, Kathy.
Yes. This one was just, again, a fantastic piece. I was bowled over by this story. I just thought it was wonderful. And it is Melanie's a Bad Person.
And that's by Manu St. Thomas from Romania, living in Germany, apparently.
Fabulous.
Well done, Manuela.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Melanie's a Bad Person by Manu St. Thomas. She lies to her daughter when the girl asks,
"Do you love me less now that you have Miriam?" "I love you both just as much,"
she says, and squeezes Anjali and strokes her hair. It's sleek, like black satin, and thick, so much thicker than her frayed, milky curls. Melanie's a bad person, and that is a fact, and every enzyme, cell, and nerve in her body vibrates to the frequency of this information. Anjali must feel it too. The girl pulls from Melanie's embrace and goes outside with her watering can, her purple flip-flops clapping on the tiles. Melanie's a bad person who never thought she'd have her own child because Sam couldn't. So they'd agreed to adopt and went to India, where they found Anjali, who in her 5 years of being an orphan had shaped herself into a gracious, lovable creature, ready to be taken home. Now, as Melanie watches her watering the marigolds, she's shocked to tears by an unbearable surge of raw pity for this poor human Sam and her brought from an orphanage into a crumbling marriage, burdening her small shoulders with all their hopes of salvation. Melanie's a bad person, and the guilt is hot in her throat. They used to water the flowers together. When she got married again, she made a marigold crown for Anjali, and it shone like a froth of embers in her inky hair. And now a warm bundle sliced from her own flesh, with milk breath and vanilla locks, sleeps in the bedroom. And Melanie remembers, as if she just overcame a fever dream, that not only did she stop watering the marigolds with Anjali, but she stopped baking oatmeal cookies with her. Stopped checking her homework. "Sorry, I haven't got time now," she said every time.
"Sorry, I haven't got time now,"
she said this morning, when Anjali asked her about their trip to the bookstore. "What day is it today?" "It's the 9th. It's her birthday." Yes, Melanie's a bad person, and the realization that she forgot her daughter's birthday seals the moral verdict like a branding iron. But maybe Melanie can try to be a good person, or at least fake it, until she makes herself into the nurturing mother of two equal daughters, zealous and intentional with her affection. She can work on love, like rubbing twig flesh into smoke, for the sake of this gentle girl who still tends to the flowers with resigned diligence, who still bears the guilt of not having been the solution to all problems, who dreamt of a wonderful mother and had gotten her instead. She can start today. Take Anjali to the cake shop, where they sell those pink eclairs she likes. Buy her a book. Ask her about school. She can go water the marigolds. The baby monitor bursts into a crackling wail, splintering Melanie's thoughts like lightning in a forest. She'll go check on Miriam first, only for a minute.
What about that, eh?
£500 says that's a
what
good story.
That? What an amazing opening line.
Just amazing. We open smack on the conflict.
Yeah.
She lies to her daughter. I mean, that's just establishing everything.
It is. And what's interesting about that lie as well, it's not a cruel lie, is it? It's actually kind of a kind lie.
Yeah.
But it makes it even more heartbreaking. And it does so much work, that first line.
It just sets everything up.
I hated this story.
Yeah.
Did it? Is it because it made you cry?
Yeah, because it's just, it's, yeah. You know, we were talking about previously and in the initial podcast episode we did about that kind of the finding that truth and writing something that hurts to write this is it. It's because it puts you in that position as you start doing the mental gymnastics yourself, because it's easy just to go, deal with it. And you think, well, what would you do? Like if that's your core belief, but you know it shouldn't be, but you can't help it.
Yeah.
There's just, it's
exposing the truth of yourself, or in this case, the character's self, exposing that dark truth is the thing that kind of knocks you sideways as a reader. But my heart really ached for Anjali, the little girl in this. I just thought, oh, no. It's sort of snatched away right at the end as well. We think, oh, there may be a moment of
that
hope.
I was just going to say, the end bit as well, where you think it's nearly tied up and you think, oh, okay, yeah, no, we can...
There's hope.
We can keep the lie up. It's fine. We can work...
No.
Oh, no, she's just run off because the favourite one's made a noise. Right.
The way she sketches the little girl as well makes it even more heartbreaking, doesn't it? The little... You end up with a really clear picture of it in your head.
It's...
Just the little bit where she goes outside with a watering can.
Yes.
Her purple flip-flops clapping on the tiles.
Gorgeous.
It's so brilliant. Yeah. And that repetition of Melanie's a bad person.
Yes,
brilliant.
Just building
it's like a chant in her head,
yeah,
isn't it?
The tension gets is built up throughout.
That's the thing, because she knows and she can't do anything about it. She wants to, but she can't. Yeah. It's just who... It's a soul.
It does give you the shivers when you listen and hear, you know, read that story. It was deeply moving and a beautiful read. I thought it was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, really good. It's interesting, the narrator voice is interesting there as well, because the narrator obviously has access to Melanie's head in real time, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's like she's sort of commentating. Mm. She's like a psychic commentator.
But
she's sort of getting right to the heart of the voice, if you like, is getting to the heart of how she feels. So it's almost like you're hearing her speak, but you're not. It's very clever, very cleverly done.
Yeah, like this close third person. Yeah, really, really interesting structure. I thought it was really good. Really, really good. In fact, I did think overall the selection of stories was fabulous. So everyone who wrote for the competition should be really proud of themselves,
definitely.
I think.
Oh, and generally, like we said as well, there was tens of others that were on the cusp that could have, that might have done, and it was hugely impressive. Really was.
Well done, everybody, and thank you so much for sending them in. They were genuinely a joy to read.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy, for helping us out and being a qualified, competent judge.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
Out of the three of us.
You have been a joy to hang out with.
It's been great hanging out with you guys. And I'm sure lots of Flash writers now will be hanging out with you more often. Now we know about you.
That's the end then of another year's Flash Fiction competition on the podcast. What fun that was indeed. And particularly for the person that won £500, I would imagine.
Yeah, we will need to have a chat with them, won't we, at some point? But I think...
Try and catch up with them and see what was going on in
we've got a
crazy twisted mind.
We've got a proper packed schedule, haven't we? So I don't know where that's going to go, but maybe...
Maybe a Christmas special, and we'll just have a lovely callback, and we'll all reminisce and remember
maybe,
fondly. Do you remember when we did the Flash Fiction? Oh, I do, yeah. Let's have a chat with the winner. I don't know. We'll squeeze it in when we can.
Yeah, we'll definitely squeeze it in because we need to hear the other entries.
I was
going to
say, we've got the other stories
to
hear as well. It seems ridiculous not to share some of them because they were brilliant.
All right. Well, let's do that. Right. Is there anything else to say, Tom?
No, there isn't really, other than do join us next week.
Yeah.
And like we said, we're going to be speaking to Andy Stanton about using AI to write books, which sounds like a terrible thing. But is it a terrible thing?
It
might not be a terrible thing.
It sounded a bit like you were encouraging that. Like, we're going to show you how to do it, how to write great prompts. But we're not going to do that. That's not really the point.
That's kind of what Andy's book's about, though, in a way, but it's not.
Well, it sort of is.
It isn't,
but
though.
But it's also not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, next week, tune into that and have a listen.
We will explain all.
Get into the genius mind of Andy Stanton and the eternal mind of ChatGPT. But until then...
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
And take care. See you next time.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?